day. This is Tommy Wren with The Gruck.
Hello.
And today The Gruck and I are going to talk about using offensive cyber capabilities, and I define those as those that disrupt, destroy, degrade, deny against cyber criminals. Is it a good idea? What could you do? Or is it a bad idea? So I remember I was sitting in an office in the think tank ASPI, and the Australian Minister for Cybersecurity, quite some years ago now, announced that ASD would conduct offensive operations against cyber criminals. And that announcement just came out of the blue. And at the time, we all looked around the office going, but hang on, isn't that the role of police forces in states? If we're going to do it against other states, what is there to stop, say, Chinese operators saying, you know, this particular person in Australia is a criminal by our standards, and therefore we're going to, you know, cyber them out of existence or whatever? And I think perhaps that's the real argument against it. It kind of breaks down the barriers between states conducting cyber operations to some degree. So at the time, I was surprised, a bit shocked. But since then, I've come around to actually positively like the idea. So first of all, Gruck, your views.
Okay. I guess the argument would be that China would say dissidents are criminals to us. Therefore, if we do cyber against dissidents, which they do already, right? Like if we do that, then it's the equivalent of you doing cyber against what you define as criminals. And
yeah.
Right. So I see that argument, but I also, as I said, like I see that they're doing that anyway. Like I don't think they're waiting for permission from the West. Like they're not looking for that. It's not like there's going to be international criminal court proceedings about this, you know, like not doing it isn't going to stop them. So may as well do it. And I think that there's very good reasons for doing it other than we can. One of them is that basically cyber forces that you have, you can't sort of just stick them on the shelf until you feel like pulling them out and using them. Like they need to be operating all the time to keep sharp. They need to have new things coming in, and they need to be gaining experience in the wild doing things. And going after, you know, cyber criminals is a sort of cheap way of doing that, as opposed to having them operate continuously in whatever, like a cyber range or a CTF or something like that. Just, you know, giving them real experience. So I think there's that to be said for it.
Yeah. Now, I agree, but also, I mean, I wouldn't go around suggesting that for real militaries, they go around conducting operations against criminals, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is the thing, is like NSA always has missions, you know, ASD always has missions, but Cybercom doesn't necessarily always have missions. So giving them going after criminals makes sense in terms of the, you know, keeping them sharp.
Well, what's the driver for it, I guess? And to me, the driver is that there's crime has become transnational, but the ability to enforce laws is not necessarily depending upon the country where the crime is coming from. Like, so I guess, you know, we always talk about Russia, but there's other countries where the domestic law enforcement just can't or won't enforce the laws that we'd like them to enforce. And so these sort of cyber
DPRK, for example.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and so if you're either not going to do anything at all about them, except work on your own defences, or you step in and take some sort of active role. The other argument, I think, in favour of doing it is that it's really super common on the internet to see like a power law distribution where a small number of people or actors or features are responsible for a huge amount of particular activity. And so the other idea is that there's a small number of criminals that are actually responsible for a lot of the pain. And so if you can do something about them, that's probably a net win.
That reminds me, just yesterday there was an article about a guy who worked for the Canadian government in like their IT department who joined NetWalker. and he ended up with 28 million in Bitcoin, and he just got 20 years plus 7 years in Canada. And what they said was one third of all of the NetWalker ransoms for like a 2 year period were because of him.
Wow.
Like this one guy was responsible for like 33% of all of those things. And it absolutely, I think it really follows. Yeah. So yeah, absolutely agree with that. The power law stuff.
Yeah. So that's super common. So I think there's a kind of practical justification for doing something because you probably could make a difference. So these are, I think, pragmatic reasons.
So I think there's an ethical reason as well. Or maybe not ethical, but like there's a moral justification or a psychological one, a psychic one of some sort. There's this, you know, you can't slap us around without us doing something back. And I mean, on the one hand, it's a little bit unfair of like, if one of your 22-year-olds comes and like screws with us, we're going to sick the military on him. You know, that's a little bit disproportionate in a way. But on the other hand, if one of your 22-year-olds is a highway robber and we send the cavalry out to like clear the highway, no one's like, oh my God, this is, you know, he's one guy and you're sending the entire army after him, you know, like this is unfair.
I think there's two things I'd say to that. One is that, you know, we're not suggesting that organizations like Cybercom go out and tackle cyber criminals in every country. It's just right. In just the countries where
you've been posting too many fake comments with spam. You're going
that's
down.
Right, yeah. So it'd be the countries where there's no hope that law enforcement cooperation would get a result.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some nexus of actually causing serious harm, right? And then right. The second part is that I think that, and I think we'll talk a lot more about this later, is that the ability of cyber operations to cause physical harm to people is very, very limited.
Yep.
And we wouldn't be suggesting that we somehow cyber criminals to death.
Anyone a cyber?
At least I'm not suggesting that.
I mean, I've got some ideas, but none of them quite rise to that level, I'll be honest.
So it seems like there's some big principle that is an international law principle about law enforcement and sovereignty that says, no, it's a bad idea. But there are all these pragmatic reasons that, yes, it's a good idea. Let's talk about what we would do and what we think the limits are.
Once you say, yeah, like unleash the hounds, it becomes, well, what can the hounds do? Right? Like what exactly is the limit of the hounder hounding? How hound can they hound?
Yep.
And, you know, I think there's a lot of things around causing discomfort in their operations. You know, you could delete the source code repository that they have, or you can, you could take their websites offline, or you could, you know, delete the data that they've captured.
Yep. I've called all this cyber embuggerance.
Right. So, I mean, I think you could do those things, but I think that if you mess around with these guys, because right now they've got weak security, and they start getting good security, right? Like they start having like stripped down, really tight, hardened boxes with, you know, no sort of easy ways in, and it becomes like, okay, well, you could use that ODA that you've got in the Linux TCP/IP stack that you're saving for when you really need it. And you could use it against these guys to gain access, or you could just let them go because you can't gain access. There's an argument there to be made, like they're a priority, but not a high priority in terms of exposing capabilities. Because here's the flip side, of course, of going after those criminals in regimes that are not friendly, right? You do not want those regimes to know exactly which links to monitor so that they can capture things off the wire.
Yeah, yeah. Right?
Which is, I think, that's the downside, is if they know that you're targeting these people, that you're hitting them, and that you're using your best capabilities, then you're basically advertising, you know, if you want to see our tradecraft, you know, TCP dump this link.
Yeah.
So I think there's some downside there. But for me, what I think is more interesting is not necessarily going after their infrastructure, but going after the individuals. Right, because the infrastructure is just what these particular people use to commit their crimes or to, you know, facilitate the criminal activity that they're doing. So if you take them out, then the infrastructure ceases to be relevant on its own.
Yep.
You know, this gets deeply, in theory, one could.
Yep.
So lots of grains of salt. But the things that I think would be useful is making someone's life frustrating. If you look at sort of the way that we exist as a society now, the way that we sort of live, there's so much that we do that is built on cyber things that sort of relies on apps on your phone or things that are controlled by computers, right? Like if you want to book a ticket,
yep.
Right, you don't go to a travel agent and then get a ticket on the spot. You do it online. Now, if someone has made it so that every time you do that, it gets screwed up in the system and, you know, you end up on a wait list instead of being put on your actual flight, or you get bumped from what you wanted to like something similar sounding, like,
yeah.
Yeah. So like, I think there's an argument to be made there, you know, stuff like shadow banning someone's Tinder profile, right? That sort of thing that it would just cause difficulties for them, or making it so that when they order an Uber, 5 show up and then none show up another time. Or that 50 show up all at the same place. Just things that make it very frustrating for them. They can't book a table. They can't get their food delivered. Food shows up at weird times when they didn't order it. Their credit cards get billed for things that they didn't want. You know, they're getting inflatable yeah. sex dolls through the mail. You know, just, I mean, I think there's things that you could do that could make someone go, you know what, this like the, I've got millions of dollars in Bitcoin. I don't need this in my life. I could live comfortably and happily without these frustrations just by not doing something.
Yeah, so I wonder if that would be like the many-headed Hydra scenario where you can make someone's personal life annoying enough that they go, okay, I'm just going to retire. But doesn't someone else just step up at that point? What occurs to me about these criminal organizations is that they're often this kind of pseudonymous organizations where there's both an element of reputation, so they need to hang on to their accounts, but there's also an element of, I don't really know who, what's his name is.
Here's an idea on that then. Similar to the like frustrating things that I was saying, for example, go to the forum and modify it so that the footer for whenever they post includes all of their docs information. You know, or just different things along those lines. Change their avatar picture to their actual picture, right? You know, it goes from being like the flaming spinning skull GIF that's like super awesome, or like the under construction sign to the photo from their license or their passport.
I guess you're saying not even just straightforward ways of doxing them, just but in a way that is kind of a virtual screw you.
Right. And here's the thing, like embarrassing them in front of their peers.
Right.
Right. Because here's the other thing, right? These are ecosystems that exist on reputation.
Yep.
Right. Like I want you to work for me because you are known as a good access broker, or you know, you develop good malware that I want. But if you develop good malware and you can't keep anything private because you keep posting it by accident on the forum, I'm not sure that I want to risk working with you.
Right? I heard a story once, totally different context, but someone working for a big tech company accidentally somehow managed to attach his entire mailbox to an email. And this was back in the day where this sort of thing could happen. It seems kind of mind-boggling now. But that seems like a great example of just accidentally attaching emails that are accidentally, air quotes, attaching emails that would be embarrassing, disruptive, yeah. Well, undermine trust.
Using their leak, here's one. Like if you get on their box and you've been collecting their chats from their like Jabber accounts and their emails, including their personal emails, use their leak accounts that they use to threaten, you know, like we will leak your data. Those things are heavily monitored and scraped all the time by these CTI companies. Leak their stuff on there, right? do it for rivals, right? So if
yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know, I think that's even more powerful than doing it for themselves.
Right. So yeah, like NetWalker leaks Conti stuff, and then Conti is leaking Revil. Names have all changed now these days, of course. But yeah, absolutely. Create the, if not the reality, the illusion of a war between these groups, which could manifest the reality of a war. You know, if they think that legitimately someone is, you know, messing around with them, they might actually retaliate. And you could go further in creating that sort of thing by, if you gain access to their wallets, you can transparently move coins to one of their rivals without using mixers or anything. Just make it obvious that the coins are being stolen by, you know.
My sense is that the Western agencies are quite concerned about financial stability, and that moving money is somewhat of a no-go area. I don't know how strong that is, like whether it would
If it goes from one criminal to another, though, like if you're transferring bitcoins from one wallet to another wallet, does that, I mean, that's not destabilizing.
Is that going to affect finance? Well, no, I don't think so either. I think the pragmatic answer is yes, just do it. I think you're talking about destabilization when you're affecting a bank, not when you're affecting a criminal. But again, it's the sort of principle of the thing. How far are we willing to let it be known that we're going? And I guess, you know, I think I agree that you wouldn't use your most secret techniques, right? You would use workaday, publicly known techniques that are still effective, but are not what I would call spooky or...
Yeah, the sort of tradecraft that people can collect off GitHub and Twitter...
Yeah, yeah. And so where I was going with that is that you would assume that, you know, you would have to operate with the assumption that someone will figure out eventually who you are. And so do you want it known that Cyber Command or whoever is willing to move money around?
I can see the lawyers just freaking out about it because, like, you and I can point out, like, I can see the principle of the thing. But, you know, pragmatically, here's what it really boils down to. And I can totally see a lawyer not falling for that at all, being full on like, yeah, you know, like I can appreciate why the money is just resting in your account this time. However, a lot of people would look at that as embezzlement, you know?
Yeah, so I don't know what the story is in the US, but in Australia we have laws about the proceeds of crime. Mm-hmm. And if I've got it right, you don't actually need to be found guilty of the crime. There's some standard of not guilt because you're not guilty, but standard where if you can't prove that you've earned it legitimately, like the government can just take it. So there's kind of parallels there that you could sort of extend that and go, okay.
There's existing laws that would, I forget what it's called. It's basically it's a type of seizure, and in the US they collect more money from that than is lost to burglary. Per year.
Yeah.
Like police steal more than burglars do.
Yeah. And I guess that actually like totally makes sense in terms of the Bitcoin seizures that the DOJ and FBI have done, right? They've seized Bitcoin. Right. No one's actually been found guilty of anything. They've just been able to trace it from a known incident or theft or whatever. So I've convinced myself that it's totally legit.
Yeah, there would be ways of finding legal justifications for it. You'd probably need to have a team that has multiple authorities operating. So you'd need like law enforcement alongside the cyber guys from whatever state agency. And then law enforcement would be able to use their authorities to seize the funds, of, you know, the proceeds of crime.
And then you just give it to another different criminal.
Right.
But the great news is that then you'd be able to seize it from there as well.
Well, exactly. That's exactly where I was going to go with it. Is you're just co-locating so that later on when you seize it, you only need to seize from one place rather than from 10. You know, you're just shifting it around as you're getting there. It's a multi-stage process. And yeah, so I'd like... Maybe Bitcoin stuff would be legally too complicated, but I do think that there's absolutely things that could be done. You know, as we said, the like leaking email via a rival's leak account, posting embarrassing information that, you know, shouldn't be there via like the forums, adjusting it so that they're doing it automatically without realizing it, and they have to go back and clean it up rather than...
Yeah, so I notice you're not suggesting just doxing them straight out in terms of just publishing names and identity document details and stuff, because the US government has done that to an extent, usually with indictments. Mm-hmm. Indictments and also at times sanctions. So it seems to me that you're implying that doing it in a way that affects relationships is more powerful than doing it just the FBI saying you're on the wanted list.
Exactly. Because I think we saw with the APT-1 report, initially it caused panic and problems. And then later on, the Chinese started viewing being doxxed as a point of pride. Like if you get to the point that the US has singled you out, it means you're doing really good at your job.
Oh, that's funny, because the sort of same dynamic happened when Russia sanctioned journalists in Australia. It was like, oh, you haven't been sanctioned. Oh, wow.
Well, congratulations, You must be doing something right.
Yeah exactly.
And so I the thing is, if being indicted has no repercussions beyond that, it's basically just saying you are like the number one criminal. Like you are the best of the best. You are way better than your peers. So I think that the idea is that it's supposed to like put the fear of God or something into them. It's supposed to be scary. But that's only true if something actually, if like there's actual repercussions. If you get doxxed and then the cops show up and you get arrested, people don't want to get doxxed because they know the next stages are cops, arrest, jail. Right?
Yeah, but there's a causal chain there.
Yeah, exactly. But if there isn't, then it just becomes, hey, you've gotten like the FBI's number one indictment award, congratulations. If you're on our forum, we'll give you a special like badge to put next to your avatar so people will know that this guy is the one that is so cool, the FBI likes him. So the thing I'm sort of suggesting is to go after the fabric that underpins the ecosystem, which is, to a large degree, it's trust and reputation. And so I think attacking that, like trying to go after the fabric of what holds the entire network together, is better than going after just the individuals in places where you cannot rely on law enforcement to arrest people and stuff. So yeah, like that's my thinking on it.
Yep. So that is not going to stop ransomware crews, right? So we're not expecting offensive cyber to stop ransomware dead in its tracks. Like that's not the expected result.
No, it's injecting friction into their ecosystem to make it more difficult for them to operate efficiently, to make it more difficult for them to operate at scale, limit the amount of money that they can make, to create rivalries, disrupt the actual thing that they use to make money, I think. Not the infrastructure, but their social networks.
Yep.
And, there's so many ways of disrupting social networks that, get the FBI. They've been infiltrating and disrupting networks and groups for decades. They solidly understand this stuff. They will have playbooks that you can roll out and just start using.
Yep. I wonder if the FBI has playbooks that rely ultimately on domestic law enforcement working. I guess that's just an aside, but I think you're right. They could adapt them, right? And so it seems to me we've reached the point where we say, yes, pragmatically offensive cyber, where we fiddle with people's trust relationships, is absolutely the way to go. It's not going to solve the problem, but I think it's worth doing something about. I think it actually sounds like, from a recruitment point of view, a fun job, like mucking around on computers to play with other people's minds when they're doing bad things is actually like, that's a good mission.
Yeah.
That's something you could see would appeal to people.
Yeah.
What else is there to say?
Well, here's the thing, is like, this makes sense against certain targets. I think, for example, Iran is a different kettle of fish. They don't rely on an ecosystem of criminality for what they're doing. They have their own internal dynamics. So you'd need a different set of tactics or something to go after them.
Yeah, right.
So they do have their own dynamics, right? There's the, you know, they do a lot of moonlighting. You know, the guys who are hands on keyboards will do, you know, 9 to 5 using the infrastructure for the state. And then after 5 o'clock, it's using the infrastructure for ransomware.
Yeah, yeah, right.
And they do that because they believe that they're like, I'm smarter than my manager who's a dumbass and doesn't know that I'm, you know, making money on the side because he doesn't understand what's actually going on. That sort of thing that creates a vulnerability in that there's this information asymmetry that they're relying on to be able to do what they're doing. And there you can rely on law enforcement, not necessarily doing what you want to do, but if we want law enforcement in Iran to arrest their criminal hackers, that's very unlikely. Unless we can make it clear that those criminal hackers are doing things against the state.
Yep.
In which case, law enforcement is going to act in their own interests, which happen to align with ours. So I think there's opportunity there that could be used.
Right.
With DPRK, I'm much less sure of how to go around doing that. I think that it's much more difficult because it's literally the state.
Yeah, but also right now, I don't think that DPRK would be the main priority in terms of stopping. Like, they've stolen a whole heap of cryptocurrency, and that's been disruptive for the cryptocurrency ecosystem, but it hasn't caused operational disruption for, say, hospitals or schools or...
Right. They haven't shut down pipelines. They haven't down... They haven't interfered with hospitals. They haven't caused massive disruption to, like, schools, like the kindergartens and stuff like that.
So changing tack here a bit, Grok, I think there's this tendency of technical organizations to focus on the technology, which I think will have some wins, but is also short-lived.
Absolutely.
And you gradually train the other side to have better OPSEC and to have better resilience.
Right.
And that's still a win, right? Like operating... Yeah,
well, operating very securely is slower than operating super sloppy.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, there's friction that you've added in. Like, it's a win, but I think that, as we've discussed, the real win is, I think, at the social level, causing social frictions where they distrust each other, where they are convinced that someone is, you know, working for the other side, that maybe their top operator is actually, he's had his account taken over by the feds and you can't trust him anymore.
Yeah.
Just the dynamics of the situation that enable what they're doing is what to go after, not the technology that they're using, because that's a thing that can be changed easily. Where the politics that they're existing inside of cannot.
Yeah. So two stories that ASD has talked about publicly come to mind. One is in the fight against ISIS, they disrupted propaganda elements and they changed accounts and deleted servers and stuff like that, which is kind of the attack on the technical. And then they had an Australian who was trying to join ISIS and they just diverted them so that they never actually got in touch with ISIS. And that's, I guess, the approaching, attacking the person, right?
Yeah,
so they totally diverted off goal. And that's like 100% success, where the technical attack is, it's an embuggerance.
Yeah, like, and now ISIS is no longer a thing because they lost some of their servers.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, they had to get new Adobe licenses and they no longer made propaganda. The end. Yeah, so I think that there are examples that we can find, absolutely, where there will be that sort of, if you go after the technology, you sort of have success, but it's inherently limited because you can only go so far, because the technology is just a tool that's being used, and it's the actual people who will find a way around it eventually, because they're trying to do a thing, right? Like, if you make it difficult, etc. Whereas if you go after the people, it's different, of course. So one of the examples, actually, it's from the book Rise and Kill First about the Mossad. They're doing these operations. Some of the operations they did when they went after Hamas were things like gaining access to the accountant and then shuffling the numbers in his spreadsheets to make it look like people were embezzling or were getting more money than someone else. And so that was creating disruptions by attacking the social cohesion. I don't believe it mentioned the success, like whether it actually worked or not.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly it wasn't, it didn't lead to the end of Hamas. However, it's the sort of thing that has been done before, has had at least some success.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, there's got to be lots of ways of doing it. There might be things such as, I'm sure that the, like when a ransomware gets paid out, some percentage goes to the gang, some goes to the guy who did the access, some to the whatever. Like, there must be software that they have where it says, you know, percentage, percentage, percentage. Mess with that so that people get paid the wrong amounts, right? Like, they think that they're being cheated. And then they won't want to work with that group anymore because that's the cheating group that they're going to dick you around and you're not going to get the money that you're owed. Particularly if you then siphon off the amount that's supposed to be siphoned off from someone who got more money than they're supposed to.
Yeah, just make everyone think that everyone else is earning more than they are.
Yeah, yeah. And that they're being cheated, right? Being cheated is a, like, when you look at motivations for people, there's a deep sense of fairness that people have. So, like, spite, I think, is a huge motivator, and it leads to disruption that we've been talking about. That's certainly something to go after.
Yep, so you heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen. Spite, that's the way to get at ransomware crews with offensive operations. Deny, destroy, degrade, disrupt, and spite. Thanks a lot, Crack.
Always a pleasure. Talk to you next week.